Welcome to another edition of the TSS Podcast, brought to you in association with Luke 1977 and Bowden and Dolphin, with your hosts, Rob Carless from Bob's Books and the legend that is Sean Teal. He's here, there, and everywhere, and he's tearly saying something.
Welcome to this week's edition of the TSS Podcast with myself, Rob Carless from Bob's Books, and of course the legend himself, the man that we're all here for, Sean Teal. How are you doing this week, Sean?
I'm good, Rob. How are you?
Oh, I'm very well. As always, always better to see you, mate, and to talk to you. Makes my day.
Creep.
Yeah, right.
Was that our producer then saying
creep? I know, I'm just reading something off the script.
Yeah, was you looking at Radiohead's?
That's it, yeah.
Yeah, I thought as much. And how are you doing, Chris, our producer?
I'm good. I'm getting back to fitness now. I had a bit of a chest infection last week. God, it hurts.
And you had it the week before when I was in the studio.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. I've probably got it off you.
No. I got it off you.
Oh, right, okay.
And that's why why I'm not coming up here at this moment in time. No, I am missing being in the studio, but I'm doing it at home. For this week, because I'm taking the good lady away on Thursday.
Again.
Yes, she turns 50 soon. So, I'm not going to say where, just in case this goes out before or gets leaked. But it's Copenhagen.
Just in case one of us rocks up and ruins the weekend.
Oh, I could just see that. What is that, Sean and Carol in the background? Oh, it is. No, we're going to Copenhagen. We can say this because this won't go out till after anyway. So she doesn't know about it. So I'm taking her there. Hence the reason why I'm down south. But
very nice.
We've had a lot of football. Well, we haven't had a lot of football going on. We've had nothing going on in terms of the Premier League over the last couple of weeks. And we've talked to death about how much we absolutely detest the international breaks, even though we appreciate what it's got to be. But, England 3-0 and 5-0 or something like that. Not a bad way for Cardiff to go out, I suppose.
I think the game in Greece, we were really entertaining. I quite enjoyed the game. It's the most I've enjoyed an England game in a long, long time.
I have to agree. They've played, considering that they've got the kids in there as well. And obviously our boy was there, Mr. Rogers.
Yeah. Created two goals. He was only on 30 minutes, funny.
You see, we've got Morgan Rogers and Blues have got Ted Rogers. That's the difference.
Booking.
Oh, so funny, aren't I, Chris?
You are.
So funny. And listen, we've got our first guest on. Well, it's not our first guest. The first guest we have, our two sponsors that we bow down to. But we've got our first guest on tonight. Right. So I'm going to do a quick introduction to him and then we'll go through the topics that we're going to be discussing, I should say. So, joining us tonight, we've got the legend that is Richard Sydenham. Hello, Rich. How you doing?
Hi, Rob. All good, mate. How you doing?
Sure. Yeah, I'm good. Chris. So he's gone straight to the talent there. He's asked me very quickly, and then he's gone straight to the talent.
Yeah, I'm good. Glad to be on, Rob.
Good. I'm pleased. So the second part of the TSS podcast for tonight is we're going to be discussing writing books, and obviously that's where you and I have got something in common. We're both working for Pitch Publishing and have books out, recent books out as well. But we're going to be talking about yours tonight, and obviously there's a tie-in with Mr. Teal on that one. So that'll be the second thing we discuss. And we're also, the last part of tonight is that we're going to be discussing who we'd have on our Mount Rushmore of footballers. I heard it on TalkSport a few weeks ago and I thought, yeah, this would be quite nice. So we'll finish our little segment tonight with that. But news of today is that obviously Morgan Rogers has signed a new contract for Villa, which is really good news. Keeps him keeps the Wolves at bay. And also as well, it looks like Frank Lampard is going to take the Coventry job. He's in advanced talks with them. So that's been the big news on Sky Sports. And that's a good lead into our first segment for tonight. So making way for the arrival of Frank Lampard is obviously the news that Mark Robbins was sacked a couple of weeks ago. Now, it comes as a shock to a lot of Coventry fans. And I think it came as a shock to many football fans in general as well. So they had Dave King, who's the chairman of Coventry. And he was talking to all the fans, first and foremost, which I thought was really good that he came out and explained the reasons why. And he was also on Talk Sport on the White and Jordan show as well. So he gave a good insight as to why he felt the need to cut ties with Mark Robbins. Now, when we look at it, what a great career he's had at Coventry. You know, you've got to go back 10 years when these guys were in the fourth division and looking like they could be going out of business. He takes over in 2017, gets them into the championship after a few years, gets them to the playoff finals. And last year, which was the real killer for them, was the fact that they lost to Manchester United in the FA Cup semi-final. And that was the game where it probably turned on its head for Mark Robbins, because he'd got a great assistant with him. I call it the assistant manager, but obviously he's head coach these days. Mm. And that is Adi Vivash. And basically they had a bit of a fallout. And Doug King from Coventry picked up on that, and that he's not been able to get in a number two for him since, and they've now decided to cut ties completely with him. But it got me thinking, obviously, this Adi Vivash, I don't know too much about him. I think he's been with Reading and Chelsea. He's never managed a club, but he's been an absolutely fantastic, second in command and has had the respect. But from what I can tell, he's not a yes man. And whether or not that played on Mark Robbins, or they've been working together too long, I don't know. But, you know, let's talk about Mark Robbins first and foremost. Sean, what a great career he's had as manager of Coventry City.
Yeah, I mean, Mark's done really well. He's structured the team to play a certain way. They play the game the right way. They pass the ball well. They look to attack every option they get. And you're right. It was a big shot to the football world, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Does he deserve a Premiership club now? You know, he's been in and around the lower leagues, and he's done well for teams. Does he deserve? I mean, obviously, it's not going to be a top six club or your top eight or whatever. But can you see him actually going to a Premier League club?
I mean, I suppose that would be the argument. Where would he go? So, you know, would he even be interested in the likes of a Southampton or one of the struggling teams? Because at the end of the day, you know, if he takes that and they go down, then it's on his CV that he took them down, when, you know, he'd probably be better with a Brentford or someone like that who are mid-table. But those jobs aren't going to come up by the looks of it. You know, Thomas Franks isn't going anywhere now. Same at Fulham. He's not going anywhere. So, you know, I think it'd be difficult for him to get into the Premiership. I think, and this is no disrespect to Coventry, I think he's more likely to get a bigger Championship club.
Mm. What are you thinking of there? Are you talking a team that... I mean, he's took Coventry into the playoffs, but are you looking at a team that does it year in, year out, gets very close to the and have got a big fan base as well? What kind of club are you thinking of there?
I think that's more so what I'm thinking of. You know, I mean, again, Leeds is probably out of the question. But you've got your likes of Sunderland are doing well. They're a big club. It just depends who's available at the time and at the end of the day, who gets sacked. So there's probably eight or nine clubs in that Championship could be pushing for a playoff spot or promotion this year.
Probably more.
And, you know, yeah, and I would think he'd be looking at one of those. I would think if he's going to go straight back in, he may choose to have a bit of a rest, a holiday, a bit of time at home with the missus, and you know, because as we all know, that you know, there's huge pressure on managers these days. I mean, you only have to look at Jurgen Klopp, who walks away from Liverpool. Whoever walks away from Liverpool, if you get sacked, you get sacked, but you don't walk away. Yet he did.
Yeah,
stating he was tired and he needed a rest. He didn't stay out of football very long.
Yeah, very true. Well, that's another story for another day on that one there. I hope he's back in football sooner rather than later, because I think he is a good little player. And he's a very down-to-earth manager, and I like his approach and stuff. If Villa was in the in the Championship, and he's now come up, it'd be certainly a player that I'd be happy to have in there. But he's actually gone back to Coventry
this week
because he's got a doctorate or something like that at Coventry University.
Okay.
But you are right, Chris. He has been there a couple of times.
We had a 4-year gap. We have to. I think people forget that he had a 4-year gap. And I mean, he didn't do that brilliant. Where was it? Huddersfield and somewhere else. Scunthorpe, was it? He didn't do that brilliant. And you know, I think he's
when Frank makes a mess of it, Chris, he'll be back in.
Yeah. Well, you're talking about Championship. You know, a couple of seasons. Where could he? You know,
just have an idea.
Here's one for you, Chris. Okay, so Blues come up this season, which could looks like it's going to happen. Chris Davies wants to take a Premier League club and gets a chance of a Southampton or something like that. Mm. Would you take Mark Robbins? Would you be happy with him?
Not really, no. I don't think he's got that good credential, really.
Even though he's taken, you know, Coventry.
Okay. No, I don't think anybody at the club would take him either. No, they've got too much money. They want somebody big.
Listen to the Birmingham City.
I'm sorry, but it's the way things are going there.
Here we go. So, Rich, you was a journalist in a previous life. Did you have many dealings with Coventry City?
Yeah, I used to cover them back in the mid-90s when I was a bit of a rookie. I think the managers that would have been at Coventry at the time would have been Big Ron, and then Gordon Strachan took over from Big Ron. So and then I went abroad, so I stopped covering the local football. But that was good days. Highfield Road in those days, of course, always a good atmosphere there.
It was brilliant, wasn't it?
Yeah, what was it, about 25, something like that, 25,000 capacity. All seated, wasn't it, for a long time. So it was quite unique.
What was the pub they had by the away end that used to go? Was it the Meerkat? Or something like that. I can't remember exactly what it was. But yeah, it was in a very intimidating ground to go to, like a lot of them in those days.
But as for Robbins, I think time will tell, won't it, this season? I mean, if they struggle, if they end up around the relegation zone, they're going to look back on that decision to sack him as a real bad one.
Yeah, absolutely. They'll
climb in the table and start threatening the playoffs. They'll say the chairman got it right. So,
good point.
Ultimately, time will tell, but it did seem a bad decision. Did seem a bad decision at the time.
Sean,
did Adrian Vivesh leave before Mark?
Yes, I think he went at the end of last season. But from what I've been reading about what Doug King has been saying, it was almost straight after the FA Cup semi final defeat to Manchester United. I think that was the final thing for them.
It just seems a strange thing to get rid of Mark in the next season when whatever the problem was has been separated. Anyway, I don't really get why they get rid of Mark because of that. If he's gone, then what's the point of it?
I think what's happened is the explanation that Doug King has given on in front of the fans and on radio is that he's... he always wanted a manager and a coach working side by side with each other. And I think they tried all this summer to bring somebody in that would be, you know, the same level as what AD was. But here's an interesting one. AD hasn't gone anywhere. So he left and he hasn't gone to another club as far as I'm aware. So he's a bit of a strange one.
What I don't get, Rob, is why are the club and the upstairs hierarchy looking for his number two? Sean, isn't it always the manager that chooses his number two?
Well, yeah. I mean, you go back to when I joined Villa. Obviously, Ron came in. Andy Gray was number two.
Who Ron chose.
And then Andy upped and left and went, obviously, to Sky for more money. Who can blame him? And then... obviously, he brought Jim Barron in. I think Jim might actually have already been there, but he just upgraded Jim to assistant manager, basically.
Yeah, but again, he was Ron's man. It's very unlikely, very unusual, isn't it, for a chairman to say, right, I'm going to bring this guy in to be your number two. And Rob mentioned earlier that apparently Vivash is not a yes man. I think that's a good thing, isn't it? If I was the main manager, I don't want a nodding dog next to me.
Absolutely not.
I want someone who's going to give me a different opinion. You're the manager. You have the final say in whatever team you go with or the players you sign or sell or whatever. But you want someone there with opinions, don't you, who's going to try and
give... Of course you don't. Yeah. Which brings me on to...
Sort of what happened at Villa in a sense, because Jim Barron basically was just Ron's yes man.
Yeah. Yeah. So that leads me on to, just before I ask you about working with assistant manager, Sean, let's talk about who we think are the best combination. I think I've mentioned this guy every single podcast that we've done so far, because I love him. But Brian Clough and Peter Taylor, for me, the best two.
Even that went wrong, didn't it? Peter wanted more say and wasn't allowed to have more say, and ended up, you know, they went the separate ways because of that. You know, Peter didn't want to go to Leeds. He wanted to stay at Derby, and that's why it all broke up.
But I mean, the fact is that he did it with Derby to start off with, and then they got back together and did what they did at Nottingham Forest, which was absolutely magic. The other one that I want to just briefly mention before everybody else, and I think it's genius. So obviously, Chris is going to raise his eyebrows to this one, but let's just go back to 1982 a minute. So we lost Ron Saunders because of his contract. What I loved about the fact that we had Tony Barton coming is he never made a change. You know, it was simple and genius. He could have come in, had his ego and gone, right, I'm doing it this way, doing it that way. But genius for me, that was. Genius.
But the interesting thing about that, Rob, is the players never saw Tony Barton around the training ground. He was more like a scout. You know, he kind of come from left field. He was always at grounds around the country looking for players. He's come from nowhere and he's gone in as the new manager. I mean, Roy McLaren was the typical right-hand man.
Yeah.
Ron Saunders, yet they didn't promote Roy. They promoted Tony Barton. So probably the right decision. I understand Roy, you know, good assistant, but probably not the right choice for the main man. So it was a good choice in hindsight. Mm.
Is it true to say that Saunders really took the accolades for that season?
No. I don't think so. Huh? I think that people recognised. I mean, I was there, so you know, I was a young man in those days. Don't say a word, Tilo. Okay, sure. And and it was, you know, we were champions of the country at the time, and you're thinking, oh, but the continuity of it and the simple things that he did, just it was Ron's team. It was Ron's team, but he took it on at very crucial times. So, you know, but there you go. So that's my favourite, number one and two. What would be yours, Sean? It doesn't have to be, you know, people that you played under, but what would you consider the best combination we've ever had?
We've ever had? Oh, my word. I mean, I've worked with quite a few, so Harry Redknapp and Jimmy Gabriel down at Bournemouth were very, very good together. And then... Everton, you had Howard Kendall and Colin Harvey, who, apart from being, you know, teammates for so many years with Alan Ball in the middle of the park, they became manager and assistant manager, and that worked because Colin was tough on the players. Colin was, you know, especially the young players. If you put a foot wrong, he'd come down on you like a ton of bricks. Where Howard wouldn't, you'd see more of Colin than you would of Howard out on the training pitch. It's such a difficult one to name who were the best. Brian Kidd and Sir Alex.
Yeah.
You know, that worked wonders for several years, didn't it?
Yeah.
You know, I've never forgiven Brian Kidd.
And Richard's going to say the same, and I'm going to say the same. When he fell down on his knees like he was in a 1980s war film or something like that.
I felt like volleying his head off.
Yeah, exactly. I know Richard would
agree
with that.
What I was going to say about that, Rob, is that Fergie was kind of interesting that because he freshened up his number two, didn't he? After he had titles, it's almost like he felt his number two's word has lost its impact now, so I'll sack him and get a new one. He went from kid, was it? I don't know the order, but he had Steve McLaren.
McLaren came after.
He had Rene Muhlenstein.
He did, yeah.
But he had several number twos, didn't he? So Mike Phelan, of course, as well. So it's interesting that he was there so long, but he didn't stay with the same guy.
Yeah.
The one I was thinking of was John Robertson under Martin O'Neill.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Not sure if Martin will ever listen to his podcast, but I actually thought Martin was limited in terms of tactics. I remember being at the League Cup final in 2010 and against Man United, losing, was it 1-0?
2-1 we lost.
2-1 we lost in the end, but we looked like we were struggling towards the end, and O'Neill was there on the touchline, and John Robertson got off the bench, put his arm around Martin, bang, 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 straight away, pulled the subs. It was like he needed his number two to come and put him right. That's not a slight on Martin. That's just it's the way duos work, isn't it?
Yeah. It's
clear
that exactly.
Robertson was a really important guy to Martin.
Exactly. Chris, who would be your combination?
Springs to mind Mourinho with was it Clarkey? Steve Clark?
Yeah, that was a good one in 05.
They got a few cup runs together, didn't they? A few cups.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah,
that's a good choice.
Yeah.
That's a good choice. So, Tealy, this is one for you, and you played the game at a fantastic level. See, I'm being nice again there to you.
What's he up?
Right, that's two nights on the trot now, I've done it. I can't believe it. Right, so what does an assistant manager do? We see them on that Saturday, Wednesday, Tuesday, whatever, on that touchline. What is the role of the head coach stroke assistant manager using old money?
I think for a lot of clubs now, the actual first team manager as such doesn't really sort the training out. I think it's the assistant manager that plans the daily schedules. You know, there will be certain managers, obviously, that are still fully hands-on and do what they want to do all the time. You know, I'm sure when Dean Smith was in charge at Villa, his assistant did most of the work because he was such a good coach. His name's left my head at the moment.
And I can't help you with that one because I can't remember.
Craig Shakespeare. Yeah,
that's the one. Yeah,
and after Craig passed away, if you listen to the players, you know, your Jack Grealish and all them kind of players, you listen to all the nice things they said about him as a coach and as a person. I think it's difficult because you can't get too pally with the players, even as an assistant, because at the end of the day, you've always got to answer to the manager. But I think he found the right bargaining chip with the players to get the best out of the players, especially in that run we had where we went so many games unbeaten and shot up the league and ended up going up, obviously. And I think he was a huge part of that.
Yeah, yeah, good call. When you was manager of Burscough and the other non-league clubs that you managed, did you depend on your assistant managers? What kind of role did you give them?
Yeah, he was the social manager. So he made sure the beer was on the coach.
That's the type of assistant manager. That's the type of.
Made sure the pints were in after the games on the bar. Young Ray, as I call him, I mean, he's older than me, but I took Ray for two reasons. One, he had a coaching badge, which is always handy at that level. And two, I knew he would never stab me in the back.
Yeah.
So he would never be looking to get the job behind my back. And he was amazing. That year we won the FA Trophy. He was amazing because he could walk in a dressing room and have them falling about laughing within seconds.
Mm.
And I just think to relax the players, it worked perfectly. You know, you get, and I'll go back to Ron. Ron was quite serious in the dressing room to a point. Yes, he'd tell his little quips and this, that, and the other. But his assistant manager was the one who went around telling everybody what was expected, in a sense, you know. So there's the serious ones, and there's the more friendly, amiable ones. We had a fitness coach at the time, Roger Spry, and if anything, Roger was the one that the players would go to if there was any issues, because you wouldn't get anything out of anybody else. But Roger would always back your corner. If he thought you were right, he'd back your corner, and he'd go into Ron and speak to Ron about this, that, and the other. And the lads have utmost respect for him, because whenever he put a session on, and it was a slog session where we ran, nobody ever moaned. Well, maybe Dalian, but Dalian moaned about getting out of bed in the morning. So, you know, but the rest of the lads would just head down and get on with it.
Yeah.
You know, and that doesn't always work that way. You know, you've got to have respect, especially as an assistant. Managers have respect because they are the manager. But if you're not a good assistant and you haven't got the respect of the players, I think you're struggling from day one.
Yeah, you're talking about there, Ray Stafford, who was your assistant manager. I had the pleasure of interviewing him for your book. And what a character he was. So I can see exactly why he was a good assistant manager for you. So talking about books, done your autobiography, which has been out for a year or so now, in good bookshops and also bad bookshops as well. I love saying that one. But the reason why we got Rich on is that Rich used to be a journalist, as he described himself there, and has also written some great books on football and cricket, to where he's also an agent within cricket as well. So I've read a couple of your books, and also your last one as well, which is called Nobody Remembers Second, which came out on Peach Publishing a few weeks ago. Rich, do you want to give us the background as to why you wrote this book, mate?
Yeah, this little beauty here.
Look at that. He's even got it ready for us.
It's just to remind myself what I've done, actually. Well, what a few of the Villa fans might remember, I wrote a book about 5 or 6 years ago called Ticket to the Moon. Now, that was pretty much about from the early 70s to the mid to late 80s, culminating in the league championship winning the European Cup. It was like a rise and fall journey. So that was a very exhaustive book all about that journey. And a lot of people asked me after that, well, is there a sequel? And I spent so much time on that, I kind of laughed it off and thought, are you joking, aren't you? I've just spent far too much time on that book. But as the dust settled, I started to think, well, if there was a sequel to that, it's probably that period from the late 80s through to the mid 90s. Obviously, the two seasons that people will remember most will be the two runner-up seasons, 89-90 under Graham Taylor and 92-93 under Big Ron. And although it wasn't ultimately a really successful era for Villa, I mean, we had that League Cup win in the end under Ron and Sean, obviously, but it was a lot of people's favourite time. They loved the football we played in, you know, Graham Taylor and Big Ron. Obviously, there was Venglos in the middle, but we'll skate over that one. But even I personally, I'd be about 16, 15, 16, watching Graham Taylor's team trying to win that league. I mean, Graham Taylor had a reputation for playing boring long ball football coming from Watford. I don't think that was very fair. I saw some of the most vibrant, exciting football I've ever seen at Villa under Graham Taylor. Obviously, he liked Get It Wide, Tony Daly, Pace to Burn, Alan McAnally, and then replaced by Olney and Cascarino. Mm. Obviously, great defenders. It was a fantastic time to watch the Villa, and then massively changed. I'm sure you'll ask more questions, but that team evolved quite differently than under Big Ron. It's just good times, and I thought it's a great story to tell. Why didn't we get over the line? Why didn't we win the league both times? And hopefully I've answered those questions in the book.
I've read it, and it brought back some great memories of the 89-90 season and the 92-93. I think the difference, and I think this is put in the book as well, Rich, the difference between Ron and Graham was that we'd got a lot of players that nobody knew of in the 89-90 season. David Platt was probably our most famous player. And obviously we had Cowan's Mark too, had come back to that. But by the time we got to Ron, we started to buy some players, didn't we? Some name players.
Yeah, well, that's what I thought Ron gave initially. Obviously, big personality, got the Man United pedigree. But you can't knock Graham Taylor because he was.
Oh, not at all.
I know you're not knocking him, but I'm just saying there's a lot of journeymen in that team that were massively overachieving to come second in 89-90. If you ask any Villa fan at the start of that season, don't forget, we nearly got relegated in the 88-89 season. If you ask most Villa fans, where would you be happy to finish this year? We'd probably have said top half. It, you know, it'd be great. So to actually nearly win the league, fantastic. But those players, I mean, he took Platy for a couple of hundred grand from Crewe and just Kent Nielsen, nobody had really heard of in Denmark, and Stuart Gray, you might call a journeyman without being unkind, but a damn good player, could play left midfield or left back. Kevin Gage, who I thought should have played for England, in the end he was so good in midfield. You know, it's just a great identifier of talent. And then when Ron came in, it's just a different way of doing it, wasn't he? He went for the big names, big personalities, and I think fans love that, don't they? You know, as you'll remember, Rob, you love picking up the Birmingham Mail and Villa swoop for Staunton or Saunders or...
Oh, it was just brilliant.
Atkinson. You thought, wow, we're really in business now. He's going for all the big names. And
yeah, absolutely.
Names don't always win your trophies, but Ron had a way of meshing them all together and still brought in some bargains like Sean and young Hugo Ekihog and, you know, Gary Parker, who probably was a journeyman, played really well. So, really, two really good managers for different reasons.
Absolutely. I love Graham Taylor. That 89-90 season was just fantastic. I went to about 90% of the games, both home and away, that season. And there were just some wonderful games. I've hosted events with Tony Daly quite a few times, and he waxes lyrical about Sir Graham, as I call him. So he's an interesting parallel. I don't know whether it was in the book, but we drew our first three games in the 89-90 season and also the 92-93 season.
Yeah, they were both started terribly. In fact, the 89-90 season, I've done a section in there that Graham Taylor was ready to hand in his resignation. On the day we played Derby, ended up having a lucky win when we should have got battered. I think Dean Saunders missed a few chances for Derby. We ended up winning 1-0. And Steve Stride tells a story that Graham Taylor went in to see him that day, said, "Is the chairman in?" Steve said, "No." He says, "Oh, I'm thinking of handing in my resignation." I think we were about 15th at the start of the season. Steve Stride talked him out of it, said, "Look, I know the chairman better than anybody. He's not going to sack you. Give it time." And eventually we turned it round massively, culminating with the 6-2 win over Everton. Everything just seemed to click into place after that. So yeah, I mean, that was probably a big reason why we ended up doing well, the longevity of keeping Graham there. And like you said, we started badly under Big Ron as well. I think we were lower mid-table after the first month, wasn't we? And I think the signing of Dean Saunders, Sean will tell you as well, but the signing of Dean Saunders was a huge lift. Just the goal scorer coming in like that. Would you say, Sean?
Yeah, definitely. And I think not just Dino coming in for his goals, but Dino giving us the energy in the team, because all of a sudden Dalian started firing on all cylinders and looked a totally different player. You know, we had Yorkie was coming in on the back of those two. So going forward, I mean, at the back, we were pretty much settled anyway. You know, obviously myself, Paul, Bill Barrett and Stan Staunton. So that was pretty much settled. I think Ron struggled with the midfield early on in that season because he wasn't sure whether to play Gary Parker, or he had Ray Outon there by that time. He'd got Andy Townsend more or less on the back of that. So, you know, he had a strong midfield, but I don't think he ever knew when to play Ray Outon, for instance. Ray really didn't feature that much in that season. He was in and out of the team all the time. If we lost, it was Ray's fault because he'd be back on the bench. you know, that's tough for players to take, you know, when it's always aimed at them. You know, again, we still had Tony Daly. We have Froggy on the other side as well, who come through the ranks. So when Froggy was flying, when he came in, so attacking wise, we had so much attacking ability. It was a bit unreal. And it's
even Yorkie was top scorer the season before when we came seventh, and then he didn't feature as much, did he, the year after when we came second. So like you say, the squad strength was really coming together. You could have chose between York, Houghton and Daly on that right side, couldn't you?
Yeah, definitely. And that used to happen quite a lot. If Tony came off, it would invariably be right to go on and take that position. I mean, we beat Forest at home. I will mention that I scored an own goal after 12 seconds.
Oh, God, you've got to say it. He's Messi-esque the way he does it as well.
It's the best lob Spinksy never got to. But we ended up winning the game because he switched it and brought Dwight on, and Dwight changed the game for us that day, because Dwight's dribbling ability and running with the ball was probably second to none at the club. Maybe Dalian was up there with him. But Dwight could go past players like they didn't exist, even given Tony's pace. Pace wasn't always the answer. Sometimes it was the trickery that got us in. And I think he scored that day, actually. I think Dwight ended up scoring and we ended up winning the game.
Had a bit of a spell at Blues as well, didn't he, Dwight?
Doesn't like to talk about that, though.
No, it was absolutely dire.
He doesn't like to talk nice about Villain either.
He did play for you, lad, didn't he, for about a season?
Yeah, I don't think it was quite a season, but yeah, he did.
He came from Blackburn, didn't he, if I remember?
Yeah.
So, Rich, what out of all those games in the 89-90 season and the 92-93, which one stood out for you in both of those seasons? When you wrote that, you know, the chapter about, you know, that particular time, which games really interested you in the ones that you wrote about?
Definitely the 6-2 in the 89-90 season. I remember being there as a young lad in the Holt End. It was a Sunday afternoon, live on telly. Obviously, wasn't many live matches in those days.
Bonfire night.
Yes, bonfire night, yeah. We were 6-0 up. I remember, this is a typical Villa fan, isn't it? It was never happy. I remember walking away from that game frustrated that we'd let them score two at the end. You know, I mean, how many fans should be frustrated after you've just beaten a team that was league champions 2 years earlier, 6-2, but we were 6-0 up and there was two silly goals at the end, but fantastic win. But Paul, as I've said in the book, Paul McGrath had the worst of his problems for a month before that Everton game, in and out of rehab and a lot of problems, and he felt he owed Graham Taylor a debt of gratitude for bringing him in. And his form suddenly went through the roof from that game when the back three of McGrath, Nielsen and Mountfield came together. That was a big part of that team. So the 6-2 game was a big memory. I think in the 92-3 season, the game I guess I remember most would be, was it 4-2, Sean, Liverpool? I think it was 4-2.
Yeah.
That was Dino's debut, wasn't it? I mean, it was written in the stars that Dino didn't want to leave Liverpool. He was top goal scorer for Souness the season before, broke records in Europe. He sells him to Villa, and then he goes and makes his debut against Liverpool, scores two, couldn't stop scoring that season. I mean, that was a huge turning point for Villa.
Definitely.
There was a good assist from you on that day, wasn't there, Sean? You assisted what a Liverpool player that nearly scored a goal.
And he's never thanked me to this day. I made him famous and he's never thanked me.
The Ronnie Rosenthal miss.
Setting the scene on that, Chris, just to say, you know, remember the Ronnie Rosenthal miss when he rounded our keeper and hit the bar?
Yeah.
One of the, it was Sean that messed it up. Or passed it to him. Sean, tell everybody what you was calling him on the way to try to catch up with him. He was questioning.
I was shouting everything at him. I was just shouting silly things because I was just hoping he'd fluff it. And of course, if you watch the video of it back now, as the ball hits the bar and comes out, I'm still running the other way towards our goal, and the ball flies past me, and it was like such a relief. So it was just one of them mad moments in football. You don't get that many of them, not to that extent anyway. I mean, I can name a better one than that. Gary Parker missed one for Villa at Norwich in that season from a yard out and put it wide of the post when yeah. it was easier to put it in. How he missed, I'll never know. And we ended up losing the game. And that in essence, probably was as much cost as the title as a lot of the other games at the end.
Yeah, yeah. Rich, did you have a lot of contributions from ex-players with the books as well?
Yeah, quite a few. The best contribution was Big Ron, because he played a big part as manager. I mean, it's always nice, isn't it, as a fan to know why you sold players, know why you bought in players. I'm sure I'd have got the same from Graham Taylor if he was still around. I was able to get a lot of research out of his autobiography, which was useful, particularly about the McGrath stuff. But Big Ron was particularly generous with his time. I didn't want to scrape all Sean's memories because he's got a recent autobiography. I thought I'd leave him out there with his stories. But Richo, Dwight York and Spinky kindly did the forwards. I was pleased to get contributions from players who we don't hear much of, like Stuart Gray and Kevin Gage, Ian Ormondroyd, you know, these kind of blokes. So,
yeah,
it was very, very interesting. I'm very grateful for them all giving me their thoughts and fleshing the book out.
It's a really good book, Rich. I'm not just saying that because you're a mate and we do Villa books and things like that. It is a really good book. Took me down memory lane. And I love Ticket to the Moon as well, which is probably one of my favourite books. But you've released it via Pitch Publishing, our big publishing house that we both work with. Big shout out to Paul and Jane and obviously Chris Eldergill, who set up this this little podcast for us, for you to come on. So good team there at Pitch.
Good people. Yeah, good people. Work very hard, get loads of books out there. I think, you know, when you're five or so years ago, there wasn't, if you wanted to release a sports book, you had to go to the big London houses who,
yeah,
you know, they only want to use the big name authors and write about big name characters, and it can get a bit cliched, but these sort of independent publishers coming along like Pitch, doing great things for sport, really, writing about subjects that deserve a story.
Yeah, I agree.
Know, whether it's story itself, like Nobody Remembers Second, or whether it's an autobiography, they give people the stage to tell the story, and it's great.
Yeah, they certainly do, and long may that continue for both of us. So, where can we buy this book then, Rich? Where can we get it from?
If they don't know, I've got a few copies. If they don't know me, usual places, Amazon's, you can't go wrong, Waterstones. I'll be doing some events over the next couple of months, so people who are on my feeds, look out for events coming up, so you can get a few players to sign your books and buy them on the night. So, yeah, otherwise Amazon if you can't make it to events.
Great stuff. Like I say, I'll thoroughly recommend it to people. And again, I'm not just saying that. It does take you down memory lane very well. So well done for that one, Rich. Well done for it. And hope you get a few sales for the Christmas period.
It would be nice.
Next week we'll do our books, Sean. We'll get our book done on that. But just before we go on to our final thought of the evening, you are hosting an event. We've just mentioned him a few minutes ago. With Dean Saunders, aren't you, on Saturday?
Yeah, the Great Cornwall Lions. I am down there in Cornwall, the event at Truro.
Yeah.
Forward to that. I think, Sean, you was at an event earlier in the year, wasn't you, with me and Dino?
And Rico, yeah.
Daily, so.
Sure. Yeah, it was good. It was good to see Rico. I haven't seen Rico for a long, long time, so it was nice to see Kevin again.
Yeah.
That was the one in Stourbridge we did, wasn't it?
Stourbridge. So yeah. I think Dean's got so many stories to tell, as we hear on Talk Sport. So he's got the whole stage to himself on Saturday night, and I'm sure the boys
probably better because nobody else gets a word in anyway.
Absolutely.
I'm sure the Cornwall Lions will enjoy it.
Yeah, I know that Dave and Dave are looking forward to it. I've said to them he's one of the best on the circuit. And Rich, you'll ask your first question, and then you can go get a few points because you won't get a word in edgewise, as Tilly's just said there.
Say nothing.
Absolutely.
Richie, you won't get a pint out of Wilson either.
Stop saying that. He's had a go at me this week for you saying that. So you can't say that about him. He'll buy you a couple of beers. He will do. Remember, that was that Tilly said that, Dave, not me on that one. Right. The final part.
I don't think I've ever seen Dave without a pint of Guinness in his hand, by the way.
I know, even the pictures that he puts on social media,
yeah.
He's the same. But that guy works really hard to get the Lions up running as he does. I love doing events down there. I've got one with Andy Gray coming up in March. So looking forward to it. But the last one. He's obviously it's been a bit of a political thing in America over the last couple of weeks. Don't think we need to go into too much detail on that. But one thing that TalkSport did, and I thought would be a good idea for us to do it, is take your four best players that you would put into Mount Rushmore. Now, for those that don't know, it's basically a place in South Dakota where they've got four of the main presidents carved into into the mountains there. So I thought it'd be a good idea to discuss our football ones, right? It can be the team that you support. It can be the team you play for, Tilly, you know, players that you played with. But, your four players that you would have in Mount Rushmore. I'm going to have a bit of a quiz right at the end of it, and that's open to all three of you on this one. So without further ado...
Rob, are these players that you've seen live?
I'm going to say in our lifetime.
Okay.
Right, that, you know, you might not have seen them, you know, in the flesh, but they've been around during our lifetime, basically. So that is the only caveat that we've got there, right? So, Mr. Teal, over to you. Who would be your four people?
Well, I'd start straight away with obviously my old centre-half partner, Mr. McGrath. And I don't think I need to explain that to any Villa fans that are watching why I picked him. You know, he was, as Richard mentioned before, he's had his demons, he's had his problems. But you could guarantee he put that shirt on, and very rarely did he have a less than 8 out of 10 performance out of him. So Paul would definitely be my first. I'd also stay in that team, and I'd pick our captain, Kev Richardson. Very underrated, very unassuming, but as a captain, did exactly what a captain should do. Controlled what was going on the pitch for Ron, made sure everybody was doing their jobs, and if you needed a bollocking, you certainly got one off Kevin. And then I'd probably jump quite a distance and go to people like probably Wayne Rooney. In his pomp when he first went to United, he was more or less unplayable for a while. You know, nobody could really get near him. He was out there on his own for quite a while. And then as a last one, I'd pick probably one of my adversaries, and that would be Alan Shearer. And really, I mean, I could have gone with the likes of people like Klinsmann and people like that, but you knew if you were playing against Alan Shearer, you were in for a hell of an afternoon. But it was also enjoyable playing against him because you knew if you clumped him, he'd clump you back, or vice versa, he'd clump you first and then you clump him back. Never really moaned about it, just got on with it. To him, as it was to me, it was just part and parcel of the game. You know, if I had to go through him, I had to go through him, end of. I didn't think, oh, it's Alan Shearer, I can't kick Alan Shearer. It never bothered me. But if he had to leave an elbow in your nose or in your eye or some other kind of challenge, he didn't care. As long as he got on the end of that cross or the end of that pass and got a shot in or scored a goal, then he'd done his job.
Was he the type of player that you could, you know, you end up having a fight on the pitch? Is he the type of player that you could have a dream with after the match?
That's difficult because really, obviously, at that time, we had the players' lounge and a lot of the time, the away players didn't really come into the players' lounge. So... I mean, I would imagine so. He always comes across as a good lad, as you know, one of the lads you could stand at the bar with and have a pint, certainly. And don't forget, in my day, there was plenty of those that would stand at the bar and have a pint with you. It wasn't really an issue. It's not like today where, you know, they're ushered away out the ground. They don't have a drink. They don't do anything really nowadays. Must be boring being a footballer now.
Yeah, you've picked some great players there. So over to our guest, Rich. Which would be your four players that would make Mount Rushmore?
Okay, so Robert, I chose one neutral player who was nothing to do with Villa, just a player I loved to watch, and that was Paul Gascoigne. Whether he was at Tottenham, whether he was at Rangers, or even in Lazio, remember the old Italian matches that used to be on Channel 4? Used to love what if Gazza was playing, I couldn't go out, got to watch it. And I remember him coming down Villa Park with Tottenham. He used to come to the edge of the goal area and ask the keeper to roll it out to him. He was actually behind the defence, always wanted the ball, and he would just dictate everything. He had great skill. I mean, as good of the game it is now, midfield, too many midfielders to me, just knock it square all the time. It could be quite boring. Gascoigne went through people. He went past two or three players without even trying. So he's one of them. Three Villa people on top of him. My little asterisk was I couldn't touch the 81-82 team purely because I can't separate them. They were all such a good team. I can't choose Cowans above Morley or Shaw or Withy and all that. So I've left them alone. My three Villa players, Paul McGrath, reasons like Sean's just said, he was pretty much man of the match every week. You know, it was it was so good. And he was in a good team of good players as well, but he was just a cut above everybody else. Fantastic. And I was really pleased that he was able to have two fantastic World Cups in 1990 and 94, which showed him bossing it at the level, which was the global level. So if people ask me your World 11, I always put McGrath in, and he's proved it. He was at that level. So McGrath for that reason. Jack Grealish would be in it. Whether Villa fans love him or loathe him now, I'll always love him.
And I do.
A fantastic entertainer. I think Pep Guardiola's ruined him at Man City. He's become a shadow of himself. Runs back, knocks it square. Maybe he's doing what Pep's asked him to do, but I feel really sorry for him now to see him like that. But at Villa, I remember him. He would just glide past people, made things happen. I think when he was injured, Villa used to lose a lot. Dean Smith heavily relied on him, so Jack would be there. My fourth one might raise a few eyebrows, but one of my personal favourites from my childhood was Mark Walters. I loved his skills. He used to do this little step-over thing. I always used to try and copy him in the playground at school, and scored two famous goals, one against Spartak Moscow and one against Northampton in the FA Cup. And when Tony Morley left, he came in and did a great job for Villa. Unfortunately, he only won the Super Cup. Probably won a bit more, but a great player. Loved him.
Yeah, he certainly was. Is that your four? Have you done four there? Okay, brilliant. Chris, over to you.
So I'm going with head rather than heart, bar one. Obviously, I'd have to put Trevor in there. So Trevor,
I get that.
Who I had the pleasure of meeting a couple of times. I couldn't leave him out. Again, I've gone with same as Richie's choice, Gazza. What a player! What a player! The other two, I didn't see them play live. I only saw them on TV and so forth. Would have to be Bobby Moore and the great George Best.
Okay, you are that old.
I am old. I've got another list that, but you probably wouldn't remember them. Well, Sean might, but So George Best, Bobby Moore, Gazza, and Francis.
That's a four.
Yeah,
that's definitely a four there.
I could have gone with a lot more blues, but you know, I'm being not like you lot.
Well, we'd have all been saying who. Right, mine then, very quickly, two Villa players, got to be McGrath, absolutely. I don't need to say any more, the boys have already done that. And Brian Little, As a kid, I loved watching him. Same as you did with Trevor Francis. We were so blessed in the Midlands to have little Francis. He was just magic on the ball. And two players that I did see play, Johan Cruyff in 1978 for Villa against Barcelona. I was just starstruck. I don't think I took my eyes off the centre circle, and he just ruled the game from there.
They were 2-0 up when he went off,
It
Rob, wasn't it?
was absolutely,
Between 2-2 in the last 5 minutes.
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And the other one, I saw play, and the best team I've ever seen play down the Villa, 83, was the Juventus team that beat us in the European Cup. And Platini just absolutely ruled the game. And again, it was one of those games where you lost, but you're clapping because the football that you've seen has been absolutely brilliant. So those are my thoughts. But I think there's been some really good choices there, some really good choices. So quick question for you then. Name the four presidents, right, that make up Mount Rushmore in South Dakota. Now, I
Washington.
know exactly what Chrissy Brown is doing right now
Oh no,
because
why?
he does it a lot. He's not looking at Google at all right
Oh
now.
no, I'm not looking at Google.
I'll tell you
Abraham
what.
Lincoln.
Oh God, yeah, okay. Right, so I'll give you the first name and one of you shouts out the second. Right, so Abe Lincoln is one of them.
Yeah.
George.
Washington.
Washington, yeah.
Who's on Google there?
Oh, that's an easy one. Come on, Rob.
Thomas
Jefferson.
and Theodore
Roosevelt.
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 Correct.
Ah,
Correct. So
anyone?
those are the
There's no Ronald Reagan.
No, there's no Ronald Reagan there. I don't think they're going to do anything with the with Donny J as when he gets him.
Imagine Donald Trump on that.
Oh God, be fantastic.
More on a stone than a mountain.
Oh, I don't know how to pick them, but there you go. That's another story. Right, so I mentioned there. We'll finish this now, Rich. Again, thank you for coming on. Tell us what your book is called, and tell us once more where you can get it.
Thanks, Rob. So nobody remembers second. Can get it. Anybody that knows me can get it from me if it's signed, or the players I come into contact with, I'll get people to sign it for them. Otherwise, if you got no access to my events coming up, well, you can't beat Amazon or Waterstones, these places. But I hope they enjoy it. A very popular time in Villa's history.
I'm sure they will do. I've got my copy that Chris sent through to me. So when I see you next, I'll get you to sign that for me. So I mentioned Platini playing for Juventus. The Villa play them again next week in the Champions League. I think this is game five or something like that now. So are you down Villa Park on Saturday and Wednesday of next week, Mr. T?
I certainly am. Yes, I shall be at both games.
Doing your ambassador role.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Talking shit for 5 minutes.
Oh, so you're looking. So, where are you for those two games? You know yet?
No idea. Not till we get that little old email from Hannah saying where we are.
Oh,
So,
okay.
but we tend to move around. So I've more or less done the whole of the ground now. So I'll be starting back at room one soon, I think.
Yeah. Well, you've been around the block, so I look forward to my invite one of these days. Absolutely,
Try
absolutely.
getting the spare. Hey, try getting the spare ticket. They're like rocking horse.
Well,
You just
there
can't
will
get
be
on.
these days. There will be these days. And Chris, who are the
Yes.
Blues playing this weekend?
I love
Obviously,
oh.
this you'll play it before the show goes out next Monday on the 25th. But
They're away. They're away to somebody stupid. Where is he now? Shrewsbury.
Shrewsbury.
Yeah, it's 12:30 kick-off, I think. Yeah.
I'll tell you now, right? Just finishing on the old third division. I'll using old money again. Watch Stockport County. Because they've got
Little
what?
Barry.
Yeah, they've got our boy playing for them, Louis Barry.
Yeah.
Really good player. There's talk that Tottenham are interested in him. I want to see him back at Villa, but they're my dark horses to come through. I know they're sixth at the moment, so you've got to watch out for them, mate.
Yeah, no, we don't fear no
Hey,
one. We fear no one.
Chris, new manager. It seems to me they might get a new manager bounce. You might be in trouble.
Oh, is it Gareth Ainsworth?
Oh, yeah. I've not been to the new ground. I've been past it and been in the Alders next to it, but I've never been in the new ground. I just remember the old Gay Meadow.
So, good luck for everybody for the weekend. Are you going to the match as well, Rich, on Saturday?
I'm in Cornwall, aren't I? Doing
Of
that
course
big
you
tournament
are.
event Saturday,
Of
and
course you are.
next Wednesday I'm in Abu Dhabi on cricket business. So I'm going to be watching.
Oh,
Maybe if there's an Abu
goodness.
Dhabi Lions club, I'll go and seek them out and watch it with them.
Yeah, he's an ambassador like Sean Taylor. That's what it
There's a
is.
great Lions club in Dubai.
There
Yeah.
is, isn't that?
About
Yeah,
2 hours
there
on the motorway, but yeah, if that's what it takes, I might have to go there.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, Rich, thanks very much for joining us tonight. We
Thank
have
you,
just
guys. Good
completed
question.
the fourth podcast. It only seems like 2 minutes ago since we were setting all these up. So I'm going to be
Good
back in the
work.
studio in a couple of weeks, Chris. You
Okay.
can't get rid of me.
I'll warm my seat up.
Absolutely. We'll go for a curry as well one of those times.
Oh, yeah. Ooh,
You
yeah.
got a good curry house by you?
We've got the best round here.
Indian dreams.
No. I'll show you a proper one.
All right, okay then. Well, that'd be
Why don't
interesting.
you film the show in a curry house, Rob? That'd be authentic, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I
Yeah.
suppose so.
Yeah.
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 Well, maybe we'll get Pat Rice on with us on that day.
Oh,
Right,
yeah.
enough, enough. Let's not go there. Let's not go there. Have a great couple of weeks, boys, until we next speak. All the best, and thanks for joining us, Rich.
Okie dokie.
Cheers, guys.
Righty
Yeah,
bye.
sounds great.